I'm going to talk to you for 30 minutes about the OECD project on learning for jobs. This is a review of vocational education and training, and I will use the acronym VET, VET, from time to time also. This was a project in which Spain did not participate, and I have not myself actively studied the vocational education and training system in Spain. I think the review is very relevant to Spain, but I think I'm going to leave it to you to judge the relevance of that exercise. I will make a few remarks about Spain specifically, nevertheless. So let me start by saying a few things about why vocational education and training is an important topic in general and an important topic for Spain. This slide is my first point. This is a picture of a copper mine, the biggest copper mine in the world. It's the Escondido copper mine in the Atacama Desert in northern Chile. This is when the copper will run out. And this is a little bit of a reminder that in the future, human resources are going to be more important than physical resources. And actually, the Chileans are very wise people because they're using a special tax on mines to pay for work on human resource development. And in fact, it's that special tax that helped pay for our work in Chile. So in a sense, this book on learning for jobs came partly out of the wealth that comes out of that big hole in the ground that you see in that picture. So that's my first point. Human resources are going to be really important. Now, still with the big picture, one of the things that is already clear is that the 21st century is going to be a century in which China is going to be extraordinarily important. Soon it will be the largest economy in the world. Now, alongside that enormous economic growth, there has been an astounding pace of development in its educational system, so that now 3/4 of the cohort in China graduate from upper secondary education. And that's actually more than in many OECD countries. And that's a relatively recent development. Now let's just have a look at China's vocational education and training system. If we compare the number of graduates of vocational training at upper secondary level in the 34 OECD countries and in China, we get something like this, around about 4 million, my estimate, each year coming out of the OECD countries. And that's the number which is now coming out of Chinese upper secondary education. Now, this is recent, as I say. If you look at the current Chinese labour force, it's relatively unskilled. But with these sort of flows coming out of their education system, that is going to change fast. What does that mean? It means that in the future, countries that wish to compete with China, compete to attract international capital, are going to have to raise their game in terms of their vocational education and training systems, because one can always go to China, take advantage of these huge numbers of trained graduates, and some of them, having been around quite a few of the vocational training schools in China, are actually pretty good quality. And international capital is, of course, going to be attracted to what will be the biggest economy in the world, already the largest car market in the world. So that's a message from China. Now let me turn to Spain more specifically and say a few things about Spain and the Spanish labour market. Now, one issue at the moment is, of course, the economic crisis, high levels of unemployment. This is a challenge in many countries. One of the things we're interested in the OECD is what is the long-term effects on those young people who have, let's be honest, the misfortune to enter the labour market at a time of high unemployment. There are long-term effects as well as short-run effects. I mean, in the short run, of course, it's hard to get a job. The first couple of years, you may not get a very good job. But those effects are lasting. I'm going backwards. Sorry. Oh, I've done something terrible. Ah, that's it. The long-term effects of current crisis levels of unemployment. This is often called the scarring effect on the cohort. Scarring because it's a lasting bit of damage. And the estimate that we've produced for a number of countries, but in Spain, is that for every 1% increase in the unemployment rate, those young people who are entering the labour market during the time of crisis will suffer earnings losses of up to 2 or 3% persisting for up to 15 years. I mean, that's a challenge for vocational education and training because, of course, if we can get those young people into jobs relatively swiftly, that scarring effect will be minimised. Now, I'll pass quickly over that one. Here's another graphic, and this is some figures that date from before the crisis, 2005 to 2007. What it illustrates is that actually Spain, in comparison with a number of other European countries, has not been doing terribly well in terms of integrating young people into the labour market. In 2005 to 2007, you will see that over that large bar over on the left, roughly between 35 and 40% of the cohort were either left behind after leaving education without a job at all, or poorly integrated with a poor quality or very temporary job, that means. And that would be rather worse than many of other European countries. So some challenges for Spain, even before the crisis. And one more chart, which is about the strictness of employment protection. That means, crudely, how easy it is for employers to lay off workers. Now, in Spain, it's quite difficult. This is an index that we've produced in the OECD of employment protection, number of different things bundled together. But you can see that in Spain, it's relatively hard to lay off workers. Over there on the extreme left, the United States is very easy, highly flexible labour market. Now, is it a bad thing for there to be strict employment protection? Doesn't that protect workers? Well, yes, it may do. It may be more of a problem for young workers trying to enter the labour market because employers may be reluctant to take on young people if they feel that if things go wrong, they can't lose them again. Now, one of the things that we've discovered in doing research on transitions from school to work in the OECD is that you can have a relatively well-regulated labour market with relatively strict employment protection, provided that you match that with a very strong system of vocational education and training. Because that means that the employers are not just taking on a young person with few skills and having to train them up, and that being a risk because of high levels of employment protection. It means they get a highly trained, potentially an apprentice, graduate apprentice, for example, or a well-trained vocational graduate. And the obvious example of that is, I can pick it up there, is Germany is there, has relatively high levels of employment protection, but is also manages to have a relatively good transition of young people into the labour market. And that's because of its very strong system of vocational education and training. So that's another reason why Spain should indeed be taking the interest, which I think it is taking at the moment, in VET. Now I'm going to stop talking about Spain specifically at this point and move on and talk about the review that we did on vocation, on learning for jobs and where it took us. In these reviews we write reports on a lot of different countries. In this case we wrote 17 reports on 16 different countries. The difference in the numbers is because the United States there, we've got two US states, South Carolina and Texas. European countries, of course, but also around the world, Mexico, Australia, Korea, Chile, countries like that. And the whole process culminated in the report, which is now published, called Learning for Jobs. I should tell you that the Spanish translation of Learning for Jobs is now prepared, and it should be available very, very soon. It's been helpfully translated for us by a foundation in Barcelona. Now, what did we find when we went round the world? We saw a lot of very good programs, but we also found some challenges. Now, one of the ways of trying to bring to life these challenges is to tell you a story about one individual, and I'm going to call this person Maria, and she lives in a kind of amalgam of all these 16 countries. And she's a young woman who's completed compulsory schooling, and she's bright and practical, and she was getting a little bit impatient with rather academic things at school. She's always had an interest in photography, and she chooses a vocational school program focused on the media with a large emphasis on this subject. And she starts the program but is a little worried to discover that her photography teacher, although a kind man, is very much steeped in the chemicals and the red light of the darkroom. And he regards digital photography as an irritating and unnecessary innovation. Things reach a head when Maria is told by a family friend that her course is widely known as one where the graduates never seem able to get jobs in the same field and always end up doing something totally different. So Maria drops that course, and next time she's determined to do something with a very clear job target in mind. So she seeks out and gets an apprenticeship in a firm making metal stoves. And one day a week, as part of her apprenticeship, she attends a vocational school and she learns about stove making technology plus some general courses. And she enjoys the work and they like her in the stove factory. And although her supervisor is rather vague about what's expected of her or explaining how to do things, she gradually picks up the relevant skills. But her mother, who is a primary school teacher, is worried that at the age of 17, Maria is not being taught sufficient mathematics or being expected to read books and write things. So she goes to see the headmaster of the vocational school. And he assures Maria's mother that it's not a problem. "Trust me," he says, "some young people are more academic and some are more practical, hands-on sorts of people. Maria's one of those." "Maria's not asking for more mathematics, is she?" And Maria's mother acknowledges this point. "Besides," says the headmaster, "the stove company will be delighted to recruit Maria. They've told me so themselves, so Maria's fine." Now, Maria completes her apprenticeship with a qualification in stove building just as the economic crisis strikes. The stove company closes down, And Maria's first step is to apply for a job in a steel mill, but they explain that stove-making skills are really not that relevant to them. And after a few rather disheartening months looking for a job, she decides to sit out the recession by re-entering full-time education. She applies for a 2-year course in management at a tertiary college. Unfortunately, she fails the entrance exam, which features mathematics and a written test. Now, that's just a story, but the problems which Maria faced are ones that we've seen in many countries, and it's for you to tell me whether you can recognize them in Spain. Now, what has gone wrong? What went wrong with Maria? Let me show you a slide to picture it. These are two worlds. Over there on the left, the world of jobs, and over there on the right, the world of learning. Now, I know those are stereotypes. Modern factories are often very clean places, and that's not exactly on the right, much like many vocational colleges that I've been at. But those stereotypes affect the culture, the cultures of learning and work. And one thing that we have found everywhere from China to Chile is that there is a big gulf in the cultures, a big divide, and that is a challenge for vocational programs. Now, in terms of Maria, how does this apply? First of all, on the educational side, we saw some weaknesses in making the links to the world of work. There was weak career guidance for her when she entered vocational education. Maria was not in a position to consider the risks of the different vocational pathways. Nominally vocational courses, which are unrelated to labour market needs and do not lead to jobs, so Maria's media course. And vocational teachers who've become out of touch with the needs of the modern workplace, her photography course. Lack of the equipment in vocational schools that's relevant to the modern labour market. And also on the labour market side, failure to take account of broader educational requirements. For example, workplace training and apprenticeships providing too narrow a range of practical skills. That stove-making qualification that led nowhere. And inadequate attention to numeracy and literacy in some vocational programs, and so fundamental in lifelong learning. Now, our book on learning for jobs is in a way a handbook to help the Marias of this world, a handbook about how to make the connections between learning and jobs, to make connections between these two worlds. And in a nutshell, our message that comes out of the book is that if vocational programs are to meet labour market needs, then we need the right skills, well taught, in the right place. Now sounds very simple, but let me unpack what I mean by that. The right skills, well taught, in the right place. Let me start with the right skills. Now, by that I mean mainly how many cooks and how many plumbers. We don't want to train all plumbers and no cooks, and we don't want to train all cooks and no plumbers. We want the right mix of them. How do we get there? Well, one way is to let government to plan it all. But governments aren't often very good at that sort of planning. They often get it wrong. One way is to let students decide. But students, as I've indicated, they often don't get terribly good guidance. They don't have enough information. And in addition, if government is paying for these vocational programs rather than the students, then it seems fair to take into account not only the interests of the students, but also the interests of the employers. So what we would want to see is a balance between student preference and employer demand. One way of achieving that is through workplace training, apprenticeships. That is a system which automatically means that you need to have a willing student matched by a willing employer. In a sense, it guarantees that partnership. The right skills. Now, well taught. Now, the problem here is that very often teachers and trainers in vocational training institutions don't have modern workplace skills. And the modern workplace is changing very fast. I mean, if you look at vehicle repairs, for example, I mean, just 10 years ago, mechanics would diagnose a fault in a car by the sound of the engine, the smell, and the look. And now, faults are diagnosed by attaching a computer to the vehicle and running tests cross-checked against the manufacturer's website. It's a very different type of skill and competence. Yet too often those teachers and trainers left the workplace many years ago. Now, one way, there's essentially two ways of bridging that particular gulf. One way is to try and make sure that the teachers and trainers go back regularly into the workplace. In China, they have an interesting program where the trainers are required to spend 1 month a year in industry, working in industry. It's quite a demanding requirement. The other way is to use part-timers, by which I mean flexible ways of having part-timers in industry and part-time teaching in vocational colleges. That's also a very important and useful initiative. And both are essentially ways of bridging the gulf between the world of work and the world of learning. And just briefly, on the other side, in the workplaces, of course, there are trainers too, trainers of apprentices, for example. And there it's very important that those trainers themselves have some preparation, because they are doing a responsible job in terms of the training of young people and the supervision of young people. And in our review of Norway, for example, we recommended to the government that they require such supervisors to themselves have some degree of preparation, bearing on both pedagogical skills but also on the business of looking after young people who may have all sorts of problems and challenges when they're teenagers. Now, the right skills, well taught, now in the right place. By in the right place, I mean very often workplaces. Now, what's so great about workplace learning? There are a number of things. First of all, from the student's point of view, workplaces are a great place to learn the hard skills. They're a great place to learn the hard skills because in workplaces you find the most modern equipment and the most modern techniques in practice. But they're also a great place to learn all the soft skills. It's at work you learn about teamwork and how to deal with your boss and how to get on with your mates and how to deal with clients. Very important real-world soft skills. Also, for the student, workplace experience is extremely important in terms of career guidance. They find out, for example, if this is a career they really want to follow. There's no better way than actually being there in the workplace. They may also get some contacts in terms of their employer that may give them their first job. From the employer's point of view, most obviously, trainees work. They do productive things, and typically for a nominal or low wage. So that's one advantage. The advantage which is less often noticed is that trainees are a wonderful way of recruiting people. There is simply no better way of selecting someone for a job than by trying them out on a job. Interviews and psychometric tests just don't compete. So again, extraordinary advantages for employers, and that's particularly important in trying to persuade employers to offer workplace training places. Now, what is it that holds all these things together? I mentioned the right skills, well taught in the right place. What holds it all together is arrangements of this linking vocational programs on the one hand, vocational institutions, with employers. In other words, institutional arrangements that will link the world of learning with the world of work. That means places where government, unions, employers can sit down together and plan and deliver all the arrangements for vocational training that I've been talking about. And that is an essential piece of the underpinning architecture for an effective vocational education and training system, an essential precondition. Now, I want to finish there talking about learning for jobs, but I will just mention one follow-up. We're now rolling out a new review of vocational education and training, and this time it's about post-secondary vocational education and training. We're just starting up. I've listed out the countries that are participating. I'm very glad to say that Spain has opted to participate, and we'll have a short review exercise with the visit. There'll be a background report on Spain, and we'll have a visit to Spain that we'll organise in 9 months or a year or so. Why post-secondary vocational education and training? I mean, this is because in many countries, labour market demands are shifting up market. Yes, we have a need for vocational training, but it's more often technical training these days, and less often those craft jobs in manufacturing industry. They're still important, but they're not growing as fast as, say, sectors like health technicians. Also, students themselves are demanding increasingly post-secondary qualifications. So this is our new review, and we're looking forward to undertaking it. Thank you very much.